So welcome back to the Proud Lady White podcast. You're joined with Lee.
And with Sean.
And we have an extra special guest with us today.
Hello, I'm Jack Murley from the BBC's LGBT Sport podcast.
Welcome. We're so glad to have you on. Obviously, earlier in the year, we came and joined you on the podcast that you do, and we had a great time and we was talking about all sorts of things. And it's really great that you're joining us today so that you can come and tell us what it's like being a Spurs fan.
Yeah, this is going to be really interesting for me because I much, much prefer being the one asking the questions than the one sort of answering them. And I have to say, and this drives my boyfriend nuts, I am the most placid Spurs fan you'll ever meet. No matter what's going right or what's going wrong, I'm pretty level pegging. So I'm interesting to see what everyone else thinks. But thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, so shall we get stuck in, Sean?
Yeah, where do you want to start?
Oh, shall we talk about, so the last podcast, Spurs were top of the table, 3 out of 3 going into the international break. We had Nuno who won manager of the month, and obviously the kiss of death came with that, and we've had a little bit of a stumbling block, you could say, since then.
Well, anybody who thought that wasn't coming was a little bit naive, I think, probably, weren't they? But, you know, it's Spurs fans all over, though, isn't it? One minute he's manager of the month, then we have one or two bad games and all of a sudden it's terrible and he's got to be sacked.
Yeah, it's a day in the life of the Spurs fans, right? So Jack, what did you make of our most recent performances, aka the 3 losses in the Premier League?
Yeah, I mean, I think for the Crystal Palace game, I was abroad and we were in Corfu and we were walking back to where we were staying. And we said, let's just drop in here. Let's just catch a little bit of the football and see what was going on. And almost instantly, things just weren't clicking, really, were they? And then, you know, what do you say about the Arsenal game? What do you say about it, apart from the fact that we were never even, I don't think we weren't at the races. We weren't even at the race course. We were in a different county. It was just, it wasn't fun, but as Sean says, that's the life of being a Spurs fan. I felt this way since day dot supporting them. You're up, you're down. That's just the way it goes.
I find it very frustrating at times when you see how well the team can perform. And we know there is so much talent in the squad. And, you know, it's difficult watching the team that you love get battered by 3 goals, 3 matches in a row. Like that does take a little bit of the wind out of you. But we also have to look at it as one of the matches was Chelsea, one of them was Arsenal. So 2 of the teams that are traditionally top 6. And have we been winning those every season? Not at all. Have we still managed to get European football, even losing those? Yes, of course we have. And yeah, Palace is the anomaly there. Wouldn't expect us to be conceding 3 and not scoring, especially against them. And that was a bit of a shock, and I was sort of hoping there'd be a bit of a reaction to that when we played Chelsea, but there wasn't. I'm really glad that in the new Europa Conference League we actually have started to perform now. I actually went to the stadium to go watch us play Ennis Mura, and I really enjoyed it. I took my friend who's not traditionally a football fan, more of a rugby sort of person, but we went along together and they really enjoyed it. And, you know, it was a really good atmosphere. There were lots of goals. There was lots of goal mouth action as well. And it was fun to watch. And I think that's sort of what we've been missing recently. And it was nice to get a little glimmer of that again. What do you think, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, 3 bad games and then we've kind of hopefully maybe looking to be pulling out of it a little bit again now. It's just the way it goes. I mean, I don't think that all the international situation has helped. I think with all these players going off and not knowing when they're coming back and all those kind of things, and are they in trouble for going off and playing for their countries or not? You know, there's lots of stuff going on, as there always is, you know, in these situations. And I don't think any of that can help. You know, we've got to the point now where I think where we know we know what the players are that we've got for the season. We can start to settle down. Obviously, Harry's had his traditional slow start to the season. I don't know whether we can call that out for anything other than just he does seem to do that, and hopefully he got a hat trick, didn't he, against in Europe, so hopefully that will be the start of something new for him and changing. And then Sonny seems to be back on form as well in the most recent game. You know, everybody's praising him. So if we have three bad games, but we can then start pulling ourselves out of it. And also, you know, from what I'm hearing from the games, you know, our new defenders are starting to actually look like they are what we hoped they would be, and pretty good players. So if they can start to perform and be able to be in the team, if they're not off with Argentina or whatever, then you know, there's plenty of there's plenty of time, isn't there, still to come.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things you said there about Harry Kane not scoring, I've read a stat the other day, and I think it's the last six Premier League matches that he hasn't scored in, and that's his longest scoreless streak since the 2015-16 campaign. And you think how long ago that was. Like, it's, you know, do we think that maybe he's had one eye elsewhere and he's obviously not quite got his head with it? I don't know what you feel, Jack, from his performances.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I think at any period where you've had a prolonged period of almost feeling unsettled at a club, and speculation cannot be good for anyone, and particularly if you are eyeing a move elsewhere. I'm curious, Lee, and maybe this is because I'm based down in Cornwall and I'm a little bit removed from it, but how much love is there for this new European competition? Because it's great to be in it, and it's great to get, you know, victories and confidence boosts and all that, but I cannot bring myself to get excited about it. And I don't know if I'm alone in that, but I can't get the energy up for these games.
Yeah.
Well, it's the group stages though, isn't it? So who gets really excited about group stages of anything much? If we progress in it, and if we get through to the knockout stages and do what people were talking about at the beginning of the season, which is winning the inaugural competition, then I think we'll be getting excited about it.
Definitely. And we was talking to Jenna Scalacci last time on our last podcast, and she was saying very similar things. The expectation for her is that we need to go there and we need to win it. Anything short of that, and it's going to almost feel like a disappointment. So
is that not an unrealistic expectation though? Sorry to butt in, because every other team who is in it and is almost maybe feeling it a little bit below them is also saying the same thing. So it's a heck of a lot of expectation to be a team in there saying anything other than a win in this new knockout tournament. With, you know, get to the knockout stages, you got to assume that's going to happen. Anything other than a win is a disappointment, because that's a lot to ask in knockout football when it gets to that stage.
I think it also reflects on what you were saying about not being able to get fully excited for it yet and not really getting the buy into it. I think that's a very difficult thing as a fan for a new competition that's below the ones that you're normally participating in. It is hard to get excited about something like that. And I think, like Sean said, as it progresses through knockout tournament and towards the latter stages, I think maybe there might be a little bit more steam building up to it, and then the team might start feeling the pressure a bit more. But I think while it's seen as a I don't want to be offensive to anyone, but while it's seen as a lesser competition, we should be performing in it at the level that, like against NS Mira, we should be doing that every single match day. And I think, like Sean said, when we get to the knockout stages, the pressure will be on a little bit more. So maybe that's when the expectations sort of, it goes from a we should be winning to this, okay, well, let's hope that we can win this. I think there'll be a little bit of a mind shift around the latter stages. It'll be interesting to see what other fans and other members think as well, the further we get in the competition, whether their views on it change, whether they start seeing more difficult competition in there and actually seeing it as competitive.
I think it's also you know, going to be an interesting competition in terms of the fact that it give, from the point of view at the moment, is what it gives us is a few more games, a bit more time to gel these new players into the team, play, and give the players confidence. If they're not getting confidence in the Premier League, then hopefully getting results, albeit against much smaller teams at the moment, you know, as they say, winning's a habit, isn't it? And if you can do, you know, it gives us that option, I think, at the moment. So whilst we may not be very happy about the fact that all our games are on a Sunday now because we're playing in this competition, there are pros and cons to it, aren't there? And if you can win the inaugural competition, then, you know, it's whatever the competition, it's a bit of a buzz, isn't it? But like you say, there'll be plenty of teams thinking the same thing, and in a knockout competition, that's never. But it gives something, you know, Spurs fans like to have something that they're going to win this season, and like to think they're going to win something. And the way things are going at the moment, it's not much else out there, really, is there?
I mean, it's the age old thing that everyone says about Spurs. Oh, when are you going to win a trophy? And every season we're like, we'll get one, we'll get one. And I hand on heart believe that that 2017-18 campaign, we should have won something with that squad. And I think we need to just grab this by the scruff of the neck and just really go for it.
And you're in it, aren't you? You know, you can't withdraw. We're not going to say we don't want to play this, actually. So once you're in it, you really don't have a choice but to go for it and to see what you can make of it. And as Sean says, some of these maybe players gelling, getting their sea legs under them in a situation where perhaps they know they don't even need to be going full throttle to beat some of these, quote, smaller teams, with all due respect. If you're looking for positives in it, I suppose there's a few there, aren't there?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. And when you look at the other matches that we've sort of got layered in between those ones, so obviously our first one is away to Newcastle, which, let's be honest, that's not necessarily going to be the easiest of matches going up at the moment. We're then away to West Ham, which, London derby, anything can happen, followed by, I think we've got EFL Cup in the mix there as well somewhere. I think we're away to Burnley, and then obviously we host Manchester United after that. So, you know, the next sort of fixtures that we've got in and around those European ones, it is definitely going to be a bit of a step up in terms of the energy and the performance that we're going to need. So, like Sean says, getting the players to gel, getting them in, knowing how each other works, that's going to be really key to making sure that we can perform in all the competitions and not just be too focused on one. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what players sort of start each of those matches and whether we have a set of players that start in the Europa Conference, and then some of them will start in the Premier League, some of them will start in the EFL, and it'll be interesting to see what formations will sort of be transcended across the different competitions.
Yeah, I mean, we do tend to have kind of a different squad, don't we? But I think it'll be interesting to see how Nuno plays it with the way that the team are playing at the moment. You might want to just say, let's just keep the team together and play your starting 11, whichever tournament it's in, because you actually want them to get to learn to know each other and to play together. And, you know, with the youngsters that we've got coming in this season who haven't had much chance to play in the Premier League, let alone with Spurs, you know, it's a big learning curve for them. So anything that they can be doing to be getting to know their teammates and for Nuno to be working out who the best team is, I think is a good starting point.
So, Jack, put yourself in Nuno's shoes. You want to be picking your best starting 11. Who are the first players that jump out at you as their absolute must-starts?
Oh, no. See, I never get into this, you see, because like I was saying at the start, I am such a placid football fan. I'm someone who loves the emotion of the game, but tactically, I am inept. I am not someone who is very good at picking the starting lineup at all. I am, with my commentary background, I like someone else to pick the team and then just watch it. So I'm going to sit firmly on the fence here. In fact, I'm going to throw this back at you, Lee. Who are yours? Because I'm always intrigued what other people think. I never really think I've got enough footballing nous to be able to pick the starting 11 myself.
So for me, I like watching the flair and, you know, everything that sort of is at the heart of traditionally Tottenham. So for me, Son has to be starting every match. Whether or not he plays the full match, you know, depends on how quick these matches are coming. But for me, he is by far our standout player at the moment. I think Højbjerg is very important in the role that he does. And the partnership with Skip, I think that's something that really needs to be developed. So I think them two, whether they're starting together or if it's a different midfield that starts, I think they need to be together more. So I personally would want to start them both, but I also understand that Højbjerg playing 90 minutes for every single match is going to burn out pretty quick. So for me, they're the players that I'm sort of looking at straight away as they're the ones that I think are going to be vital to us getting the results. Whether or not it's going to be the best team and it's going to be the most attacking team, probably not. But I think if you've got them three in your starting 11, you're setting yourself up for a good opportunity to be solid and get the goals. What do you think, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think that Skip needs to be somebody who's in there regularly. You know, he's proved last season in the Championship what an integral player he was to Norwich last season. look at the way he's played this season. When he's been playing, he's been huge for us. When he didn't play against Arsenal, you know, things went a little awry, didn't they? And whether he's completely the full package now or not, he is going to be huge for us, I think, in the future. And I think he deserves to be starting the games and playing. And I think he can learn a lot from Højbjerg. As you say, Sonny's just on fire at the moment. Now is about one of the few players who, you know, is consistently playing well, and you know who we know, you know, is a world class player. Obviously, you know, you're going to put Hugo in goal and play him. I think centre back partnership is going to be interesting because obviously we've got Joe Roden, who's getting frustrated, I think, at lack of game time. But when you've got Romero coming in, who clearly is going to need to start for us, I think, and be a starter going forward. Who do you choose to pair him with? I don't know, but I think he's going to be the centre back of choice. And I think, well, for me, I wonder where you all stand on the Dele Alli issue, because I think he has moments where he looks like he's going to be back to his old self, but it's not consistent enough, and he seems to me to be getting himself in quite a lot of trouble as well.
I was just going to say, I think there's frustration there, isn't there, Sian? And I think that the psychology of players, when they know what level they were performing at, it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because they have the flashes of that again, and then maybe it goes away and it's not there. And then you almost get into your own head. Now, I'm not a sports psychologist, but I wonder if there's an element of that going on. And just to come back to what you were saying, Lee, about Son, I think there is an element of wanting to see Spurs play with a certain panache, right? A certain swagger to a degree. And it's this age-old thing that I've often asked myself, would I be happy to see Spurs winning trophies and grinding results out and playing dull, uninspiring football? Or do I need something more as a Spurs fan? And I think, to go to your point, you want a certain style when they play too.
Yeah, absolutely. That's sort of the beauty of going to the matches, watching them, or whether you are subscribing to watch them at home. I think if you haven't got something that you want to watch, it's very easy to fall out of love with the team and with what's happening. And yeah, you could be winning 1-0 for your first three matches and top of the league, and that's great. But then when you follow up with results that don't go your way, it's almost like, well, what are we watching for?
Do you think that's because that's something that I feel more keenly because of the three of us, given where I am geographically? And I know you have folks who listen wherever it may be. I don't get that feel of being in the stadium. I don't get there for that tangible aspect of things. I'm watching on a sofa from afar, and maybe I often thought that the fans who don't get along sometimes have a slightly skewed vision to the ones who go there and have a match day experience that goes with the result as well.
Yeah, it's a very interesting dynamic, because obviously if you're watching from home, it's very easy for you to just be like, you know what, I want to switch off for a bit, or you can lose attention. Whereas when you're in the stadium, you're watching absolutely everything that's going on. So yeah, there is a different dynamic there. A lot of our members are sort of around the world. So we've got members regularly who watch in America and South Africa and places like that. So for them, when we're sort of interacting on our group chat, a lot of them are frustrated and sometimes just want to switch off and not watch Spurs, because all they're seeing is, you know, negative football. And yes, sometimes good results, but most of the time not. So I can understand why a lot of people are frustrated at the situation, and you know, there's a lot of frustration directed at higher ups within Spurs for all sorts of reasons. But I can see where that comes from. But from having the experiences in the stadium, you're right, Jack, there is that extra level of involvement and that connection that you feel, where it's almost like you'll let them off from having a bad performance here and there, because you know that they're going to go and you're going to get entertained at some point, and you're going to be there and you're going to feel that euphoria again. It's almost a bit like an addict, addicted to watching Spurs play well and performing at high levels. So to not have it, you're just sort of waiting for when that is going to happen. And maybe, like you said, the little distance between the physical being involved makes it feel less connected, maybe. I don't know. That's just what I think. I don't know what you think, Sian.
Yeah, well, I mean, I haven't, you know, I feel a bit disconnected from the men's team a little bit at the moment. I didn't go to the last game because I was watching the women. So I guess, and obviously Arsenal was away, so I didn't see that. And you know, I think ultimately Spurs is Spurs, isn't it? You know, if they were winning all the time, we wouldn't be happy either, because that's not what we're used to. There's got to be an element of leaving it to the last minute and of tripping ourselves up. I mean, I think this season you look at the league and actually I don't think there's anybody really yet running away with it, is there? So I think we've got time to get ourselves sorted, and if we start putting in good performances, we can do the usual Spurs thing of still anticipating winning everything. But yeah, I mean, I think you want to see good football, but ultimately football's about winning, and if we want to win trophies, you've got to have that element to it too. And a 1-0 win is better than a 3-2 loss, isn't it?
Absolutely agree with you on that. It makes me sort of almost anxious being a Spurs fan, but I also know that that's what it's always been like. And like you said, we know what Spurs are like, and you have the hope. The hope will kill you, but you have the hope. And for me, I try and hang on to that at times. And there are times when I want to just completely distract myself from everything in the football world. And I'll get people that will message me and talk to me about football, and I just really will try not to connect with it because I don't want to feel like that. And when the team do come out and they do perform, it's almost like all the sins are forgotten. It's like we're back to where we are, and now I can start enjoying it again. So it is that roller coaster of being a Spurs fan.
I think, like you, Jack, I try to keep myself quite cool about it all. I try not to get involved in the quite the ups and downs that some fans do, because I just think, you know, as I say, you know, when you have three good games and you're top of the league and everybody's talking about how brilliant we are, and then you have a couple of bad games and all of a sudden it's the end of the world. I haven't quite got the energy for that kind of commitment to it all, really. But and as you know, the season is still very young. There's nothing's been decided yet. No team's running away with it. No team's in complete trouble. Manchester United are having problems. I saw something on socials recently talking about actual levels of expectation. You know, West Ham are supposed to be having a brilliant season, and Arsenal are supposed to be back on form, and yet they're both below us in the league. So why is it that Spurs are having a terrible season? You know, I think there's a certain expectation amongst Spurs fans that's perhaps a little bit unrealistic, that we'll always be doing well and we're going to do brilliantly. Just being at Leicester, watching the women's game last weekend, we were talking about that comparison between Leicester, who have won the league in recent years. Why are their fans not kind of up in arms about how they're performing at the moment? And there is a level of expectation that comes from being a Spurs fan, and either you ride that wave and get yourself all caught up in the highs and the lows of this kind of season discourse, or you just allow it to wash over you a bit, I think, and let the performances give you highs and lows, but the, you know, during the game and that's what it's all about. But in terms of the kind of the pattern of the season at this point, I think we're far too early to be getting too caught up in it's all wonderful or it's all terrible.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I try and take a sort of eagle eye view of what's going on, because I completely agree. And I try as well not to get too wound up by things I can't control. And whether I am raging or not, I have no control over the way that the team plays. And I, as a Spurs fan growing up where I grew up, I remember the doldrums. I remember the idea that we would be, you know, having European football was an absolute dream that could never happen. So for me, I've experienced the lows. I've experienced the where you do literally the sum root of nothing in the table. I was watching an old, because this is what I do, an old YouTube clip the other day of Des Lynam's final premiership, and he was signing off from that, and you saw the table and we were 14th, I think, 15th, something like that. And that's, I'm old enough to remember that, and it wasn't that long ago. So I try and be fairly placid about it, and you think, all right, if you get too worked up, what are you going to change now? Realistically, it's so early in the life of Nuno's reign and this season. You just have to take a breath, I think.
Yeah, it's quite fun watching my nephew, who is he's 10 now. He's he's a crazy Spurs fan. I mean, he's a crazy football guy. He's one of those, would have been in love with football no matter what. But because I'm a Spurs fan, he's a Spurs fan. And he has literally, because of the way Spurs have played in his kind of lifetime, he sent me cards saying, thank you for making me a Spurs fan and all those kind of things. He loved, you know, but in the last couple of seasons, he's also seen the other side of being a Spurs fan. And I have had to say to him, you know, this is being a Spurs fan. The Champions League final was brilliant and wonderful, but it's not the regular occasions that Spurs are doing things like that. And the loss of hope, and with the England over the summer as well, you know, the same. He was in floods of tears at the end of the Euros. And you just kind of got to say, you know, I mean, he's young and he's still learning, but, you know, you can't let football do that to you. Enjoy the highs, but don't let it do that to you. But, you know, he is like the rest of us, and he's back on watching the season and being, you know, full of hope again. It's fun to watch the next generation doing exactly the same thing as we've done over the years.
So we got a member question actually on this sort of topic for you, Jack. And they ask you, for you, what would a successful season for the men's team look like?
A successful season for the men's team for me would look like Champions League qualification. I think we're good enough to get there, and we're good enough to do it. I think a successful season would be reaching a cup final. I think we're good enough to do that. I think we've got the pedigree and the players to do it. What I would like is some consistency, and I would like some flair, because for me as a fan, I think the club has had a very long hangover from when Poch went. And a slight sidebar, I was sitting in Riga watching Latvia against Austria on holiday in a Euros qualifier when the news came through that Poch had gone. And I couldn't believe that had happened. And I think for me, just as my personal opinion, the club has lost some of its swagger and feels like it's gone through a hard time since then. So for me, I'd like a sense of optimism back. That's an intangible. In terms of a tangible, what would success be? I think Champions League qualification, to get back there, to prove that when we were reaching the final and qualifying regularly for that, it wasn't a fluke. And I think like every Spurs fan, like to see us win silverware. And I've thought for the past 4 or 5 years, there's been no reason why we can't do it. So that's what I think it would look like for me. That's what success would be.
And what about for you, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. That Champions League would be lovely. I mean, I think it we're a long way off knowing exactly who the top four are going to be this season. So be interesting to see. But I think might be a little bit too much for Champions League this season. But certainly Europa League, I guess, is slightly better than what we've got at the moment. But just, I think just having some sense of team again and some sense of moving forward as a community, really, because at the moment, it feels like every time something goes wrong, the fans are on the backs of somebody. And I feel like it's a really fractured community at the moment, which isn't helpful for anybody. And I mean, the way to do that really is for the players to start scoring and start winning and start looking happy, then everything else falls into place, doesn't it? And I think so long as we can get some of that back again, and then, you know, finish above Arsenal again, and a trophy would be nice to break that duck of making it to the semi-finals and nothing more. It'd be nice. It's about time we did something. And, you know, Europe is a good opportunity this season, and the cups are a good opportunity just to see the team actually playing for the shirt again. I think with some new players coming in, seeing those players. I mean, we've seen Toby Alderweireld's interview recently talking about the club and how much he clearly still loves Tottenham and you know, talking about Daniel Levy in positive light and things. And I think just to see the new generation of player kind of come into the club and feel that way about the club is what we need to see, and get some fans stop talking about all the terrible things and just focus on playing, which, as I say, the best way to do that is for those players just to start putting smiles on their faces and getting some results.
So do you think that if we won silverware, a trophy, this season, that would be a big step in the healing process, like you said, about feeling like it's fractured. Do you think that getting that silverware is going to be the start of the recovery?
It has the opportunity to be. It in and of itself, it's not, because, you know, a fluke win, you know, it has to be the start of something bigger. And it absolutely can be. And I think the way we are at the moment, I think with the fan community at the moment, I think it needs to be more consistent than one competition. One knockout competition is not, I don't think, enough at the moment to really heal the wounds. I think it's a bit longer than that.
Yeah, I hear you on that one. And I think, yeah, lots of the things that people are saying that are fracturing at the moment, it relates to just more than winning a trophy. It's about sort of all manner of things. So I think I agree with you that it's going to take a little bit more than that to paper over the cracks and start that healing process. So let's go on to the women's team now. Well, just looking at the table, it makes for pretty viewing, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. It has been a whirlwind, really, for the women. And the first three games of the men's season, take that and look at the women's game, and it's pretty much the same. Our second game, we went up to Manchester City. If you know anything about the women's game, you weren't expecting Spurs to come away with anything other than a heavy loss from that game, although hoping to start narrowing those deficits. And we came away with a 2-1 win, albeit it was a little bit of a controversial goal. But, you know, from the point of view of the confidence of the players and the togetherness of the team, brilliant. And then we've gone on to keep winning in the games we played. We've won all our games. The only other team to have done that is Arsenal. So we're second in the table, just below Arsenal, who, as we know, in the women's game, have been at the top of the game for a lot longer than we have. I think the next two games for the women's game are crucial. We've got Brighton on Saturday, and then we've got 3 weeks off, and then we've got Man United after that, and then Arsenal after that. But if we can get results in the Brighton game and the Man United game, then somebody was toying with my with me the other day, talking about our Spurs in the hunt for the Champions League. Well, if we win those two games, there's going to be no stopping us saying yes to that question.
So, Jack, have you managed to see any of the highlights from any of the women's matches? Obviously, I know because of location, you've not been able to come over to them, but have you seen any of them?
Yeah, I've watched some of the highlights. In fact, I was watching the September Goal of the Month montage on YouTube just a few minutes before we started recording it, and some of the goals are on there. I think for me, speaking more broadly, it's amazing to see Spurs doing what they're doing, but to see women's football and the platform it's got now, and I say this because I, 6 years ago, was commentating on Yeovil Town Ladies in what was then WSL2, and you just knew that if you could give a platform to these talented footballers to get the eyes on them, the game would just explode. And now the fact that you can turn on Sky Sports or the BBC and you can see Spurs playing, or you can see any number of elite women's teams, is fantastic. And Sian's right. I mean, you don't want to say hunt for Champions League places, because it almost seems ludicrous to voice that out loud. And yet, it's not beyond the realms of possibility. Whisper it quietly, it could happen. And that is extraordinary.
Well, like the men's game, you know, this season we're looking at Manchester City have started terribly.
Yeah.
Manchester United have not started well. Chelsea and Arsenal are doing pretty well, but, you know, Arsenal beat Chelsea in their opening game of the season, which means that we're above Chelsea in the league. The normal run of things, which is that Arsenal, Chelsea, Manchester City, Man United win all their games, and then the rest kind of you muddle through, and then it's whoever wins the other games, is not the case this season. West Ham just beat Manchester City without relying on a, you know, dodgy handball. So it's just, you do, that things are changing, and it is really fascinating, because I genuinely didn't think before this season that anybody was yet ready to challenge those top four. And yet here we are with two of those top four not performing as well as we know they probably should be, and other teams stepping up and, you know, and hurrah for us. Spurs have been one of those teams so far. As I say, the Brighton game is going to be huge for us this weekend, I think, because Brighton started really well, had two brilliant wins to start with, and then fell away and have lost their last two games. So they're going to be looking for a win. And I mean, one of those losses was against Chelsea, so you kind of anticipate that. But the other was against Aston Villa, which is a game should you say they should probably be winning. So it's going to be a fascinating game on Sunday. It's away in Crawley, which is great for me because that's my nearest women's team ground. So looking forward to that, taking my nephew to that one as well. And there's going to be a group of us going down for that one. So if you are anywhere near Crawley, come on down and join us at that game, because it's going to be a really fascinating matchup. Brighton have for the last couple of seasons just not been able to be consistent. And if they'd been consistently playing as well as they can, they would have been challenging for those top four places before now. So it's going to be really fascinating to see which team comes off best in that. And then looking at, you know, Reading, who've started terribly this season, despite usually being one of the teams that would be up there in the sort of fifth and sixth places. So really, really different this season, but great to have so many people watching and so many ways that you can watch it. And don't forget, if it's not on Sky, which, because we're not one of the top four, it's often not, the FA Player, you can watch it for free. You know, still a long way to go in terms of the fact that they still haven't announced the dates, the fixtures that are going to be on television for November, which is a little bit galling, but you know, at least we're starting to move in the right direction.
And how much, Sean, given you see more of the team than I do, but we were talking about how winning breeds winning. The team will know that they're doing something which the experts and the pundits are saying shouldn't be happening. They will be just as cognizant of it as you and myself and Lee are as well. And you know, you don't want to go this far yet, but we saw it with Leicester in the men's game when they went all the way to the Premier League title. Sometimes these things, as time goes on, do build a momentum of their own and the mythology around it. Now, we're not there yet, clearly, but the confidence must be there.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting again, because we let 11 players go at the end of last season. So it's kind of half the team that we know and half a new bunch of players coming in. So, I mean, after the Manchester City game, I had a chat with Ash Neville and we were just like, finally, you know, we've been waiting for this kind of a win against one of these sides for a long time. Hopefully it can take us all the way. You look at the way we're playing. As I say, I think the next couple of games will really show us where we are with that, because the other games we've had, you know, we played Leicester and they've really struggled. But the thing that really interests me actually is that a lot of the pundits before the season were saying that they thought Leicester were going to do better than us this season, because Leicester have invested a lot in coming out. Their training facilities are fantastic and all those kind of things. And people, I think, really wrote us off before we'd even kicked the ball this season. So from that perspective, I'm really enjoying watching how we're playing. And I suspect the players are as well. I'm sure they're aware that the pundits weren't expecting too much from them this season, and to be able to be second in the table, having beaten Manchester City at this point in the season, you know, and to be a new team together and only know what it feels like to win. And the other great positive is that in the Continental Cup, which is the League Cup for us, for the first time ever, we've got a group where we're not in a group with Chelsea or Arsenal. So we might actually get out of the group. In fact, if we don't get out of the group this season, there's something wrong, because we're playing against championship sides, and no disrespect to those championship sides, you know, we should be beating them. Although there's real interest there as well, because the next game, actually next week on Wednesday night, we've got Charlton coming to the Hive. And of course, they're managed by Karen Hills, who used to manage us, and they've got quite a lot of ex-Spurs players in their ranks. So that's going to be a really fun game. But we should be winning it, even though Charlton are doing well. And those kind of games are going to breed confidence as well. So there's a lot of positives and there's a lot to be hopeful for. And I think, as I say, next two games, if we can get results in those, sky's the limit.
Yeah, I saw a stat. If you compare from last season, I saw a stat that the women in the WSL, they've scored over half their goals in the last 15 minutes of matches. And when you compare that to last season, where that's where we were losing our heads and conceding those goals and dropping the points, what a turnaround that's been. And you know, how much do we credit Brianna Skinner for coming in and doing that, you know, giving the team the confidence that you can see these matches out, you can keep going for it, you know, building the fitness up so that we are competitive for the full 90, not just the first 75. I think that's really, you know, what for me has been the standout difference between last season and this season is the way that we're finishing matches and seeing our results.
Yeah, one thing that we noticed under Karen of Guam before was that the players, if they made a mistake, they were off the pitch and that was it. Whereas under Rianne, there's completely different kind of rhetoric around that, which is, you know, if you make a mistake, get up and sort it out. You know, the rest of the team needs to be behind you. And, you know, if anybody makes a mistake, then we just get up and we sort it out. And I think that's a much more positive message to be having. Talking to the players, they're having a great time under Rianne, and the training is a different level compared with what it was before, and because Rianne's experience is that, and you know, Karen and Juan did a great job for 10 years with the club and brought us to where we are now, but it's a different level now and the expectations are different, and I think, you know, I'm hopeful that we can keep moving in this direction and that this season is the start of things to come.
It does look very promising, especially, like you said, given that we've now sort of broken that duck of being able to beat one of the bigger teams in their own backyard as well, which, like you said, if you were looking at us 3-4 seasons ago in the second league, that would be sort of where you'd be looking for 5 to 10 years, not 2 or 3.
Well, you know, as I say, we didn't think this season we'd be quite there yet, but maybe we are. And I mean, that trip to Manchester was fantastic because beginning of the day, you know, as you are with Spurs, why am I going all the way to Manchester to watch us get beat? Because that's the anticipation at that point. And then half time, it was 1-1. I mean, we were happy when we scored a goal because we hadn't scored a goal against Manchester City before, I don't think. So, you know, that was big for us. And then being level at half time, because they scored first and we were like, oh, here we go, because it was within 6 minutes. And then we got back into it half time. It was 1-1. We were like, if it stays like this, we're happy. And then, of course, you know, the dodgy goal happened. But you take those, you know, it's football. You don't turn those things down.
I mean, over the season, they're going to balance out. So
yeah. And if you're Man City and you're complaining about losing to a dodgy goal, all right, fine. It was 1-1 though, you know, like you. And I think what you're talking about there, Sian, is what we were talking about being a Spurs fan. It's the hope that sometimes kills you, but it's those moments like you experience that keep you coming back. That well, surely this can't happen, and yet it's playing out before my eyes. And you're at a magic moment. That's what football. That's what keeps us all coming back. As Lee says, it's a drug, but that's the moment that sort of gets into your veins.
Yeah, and it was brilliant. And you know, as I say, talking to Ash afterwards, you know how much it means to the players as well. Certainly, the players who've been at the club for a few years and understand the fans. Perspective on that as well, and the players who are new just coming in, and you know, most of those players have played at similar clubs who have struggled against those top four teams, and you know, to be doing that, you can see how much it means to them. It is what keeps us coming back, and you know, hopefully we can have some more of that this season. We'll see what happens with Man United and if they can start to perform like they should be, or whether we can get something from those games as well. I mean, huge games coming up. Bit of a break coming after the Crawley game, but yeah, just and you know, as I say, with the women's game, the difference is you get to then go and enjoy that experience with the players as well, which is, you know, which is lovely. And despite the COVID restrictions, they're still coming over and chatting to us and sharing their experiences of the game, which is great. And even in the loss in the FA Cup to Arsenal, cold Wednesday night, we were having quite a bit of fun bantering with the Arsenal fans, which, you know, in a way that you can't in the men's game because there are just people who take it too seriously.
I was going to ask Sean how you're finding the match day experience both at the Hive and at other grounds, you know, given we wasn't really sure what the COVID restrictions were going to be at the start of the season. There was a lot of ambiguity around it. And, you know, just wanted to sort of get your input into what what sort of like that looks like now. Are we getting sort of regular attendances? Is it the fans are being split up in the ground? What sort of that match day experience like?
So we've only had one game at the Hive so far. I would say we were busier than season before. Certainly felt like there were more people about, which was great, and we won, which was even better. And I think officially there's still supposed to be restrictions, and players aren't supposed to be coming over and chatting to the fans as much, but they are doing it. I think there's a difference. I think some team at the Arsenal game, there was an announcement on the speakers saying the Arsenal players won't be coming and talking to the fans because we're keeping our bubble, but some of them still did, and the Spurs fans certainly did. I mean, there was a couple of young girls with a Spurs flag behind the goal, and a couple of the players went straight over and were signing the flag and things. And I think the women's game seems to be pretty much back to normal in that respect. As I say, our first game was at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, so we always a bigger attendance there. Although this year, obviously, nothing like previous year when we broke the record, but still, I think about 5,000 people there for that one. Then I'd say there's probably a couple of thousand at the Hive for the game there. So a bigger crowd than we have had. And obviously at the North London Derby at Boreham Wood was quite busy, even though it was an evening. There seemed to be quite a lot of Arsenal fans about who hadn't been to women's games before, because you could hear them getting excited about being 3-0 up. And we were like, yeah, that's quite normal in the women's game. But Chris, being Chris, was singing for Tottenham, and as soon as she started, then the Arsenal fans would start singing to try and cover up. And
did they drown her out?
Well, they did, because there were quite a lot more of them than there were of her. But it was quite funny. Some of them got quite funny towards the end, but then equally after the games, a couple of people came up to her and were like, you know, good on you and things. So, you know, you just got that, you know, the women's game is still at that stage where you can still be friendly with the opposition fans quite happily, and you can have that back and forth in a good natured way, and we're all sitting in next to each other and still, you know, supporting our team vocally. And we scored first in the North London Derby, so we were starting to think, hang on a minute, are we going to have another one? But it went back to normal after that. But you know, just to be able to you know, experience that banter in that way, that you still have that team loyalty and that team identity, that is what so many of us enjoy about football, but without it being something that's actually fractious.
So the next two matches that the women are playing in the Super League are, is it home, two home matches now?
No, we're away to Brighton. So as I say, down in my neck of the woods, and then we've got 3 weeks off, and then we're home to Man United, and then we're home to Arsenal. So officially the home games are both at the Hive. But as I say, the TV announcements haven't been made for November yet, so those games could move dates at the moment. But this weekend, Sunday, is the Brighton game. So yeah, looking forward to that, and then a bit of a break, which will be a bit of a downer. But then we're back with two big games. So
it's an exciting time to be able to hopefully come down to either the Hive or wherever we're playing, and hopefully, like you said, that euphoria of sort of leading Arsenal, which I think that is the first time that we've done that in a fixture.
Yeah, only our second goal against Arsenal in the league. So yeah. That was pretty good. So the 7th of November at the moment is home game to Manchester United, 14th of November home game to Arsenal. So come down to the Hive, assuming we're there. It is there, but they're selling tickets for those dates, and at the Hive. Going to be two huge games. The team will really be grateful for any support, so come down and enjoy the women's game and see if we can stay second in the league. Hey, if we win all three of those games, we could even go top.
It's an exciting times ahead. So I'm just going to come to a couple of questions that we've had some members send in. So I've already asked you one, Jack. I've got a question for Sian. Who's been your standout player for the women's team so far this season?
We've got some exciting players. I'm going to say Molly Bartrip, though, as a new centre-back. She's come in from Reading. She's been really solid. Great defending really helped us out. You know, we've got one of the best defensive records. We've got our defence. We've had Shalina Zdorsky's been in the team of the week for the last 3 weeks in the Super League. Becky Spencer and Ash Neville have been getting some pretty good write-ups as well, and they've all been fantastic. But for a new player coming in and building that relationship with Shalina, I think Molly's been fantastic. And Jess Naz going forward has shown some good skill, and hopefully we're going to see the best of her this season after some injury. Rachel Williams has been working really hard as a striker and got her goals just simply from working really hard. So, I mean, lots of great players, but I'm really happy to see Molly Bartrip and what she's done at the back with Shalina, who has, as ever, is a fantastic centre-back. And we're looking like we've got a really strong, clear defence going forward.
Brilliant. And then the same question to Jack, but with the men's team. So who's been your standout player for the men's team this season so far?
I think we've already spoken about Sonny, haven't we? I think that yourself and Sian have both said it. I think pretty much head and shoulders in terms of creativity and playing for the badge. I'd like to see a few more players come up and meet that level, but I think we're going to try and be positive. And who has it been? I think for me, it's been Sonny. But I do think, going back to something Sian said, the season is still young. It is still a team that is trying to gel under a new manager and trying to sort of steady the ship a little bit. So the fact that Sonny is so clearly head and shoulders above the others in my mind isn't an indictment of the others. I just think give it time to set and find a rhythm, and I'm sure others will be meeting him up there. But I don't think there's many Spurs fans who would disagree with that. I'm struggling to think of any others I'd put in that conversation.
Yeah, agree with you there. Maybe Lloris.
Just
from the first three matches, not conceding. But yeah. So another question we've got from a member for you, Jack. What growing up was your favourite Spurs highlight?
Oh, that's a question, you see, because I am a nostalgia person. Can I give you, instead of a game, just my moment, which is the first time I went to see Spurs play, because I am a proud Cornishman, but we are at the tail end of nowhere. And so to get to see Spurs play was this thing I never thought would happen. I can remember on, I think, my 10th birthday, Mum and Dad gave me tickets for Spurs against Leeds. And we all piled onto a coach at a leisure centre car park. And it wasn't a particularly memorable game. I think it was maybe 1-1, not a huge amount happened, but getting to White Hart Lane for the first time was just otherworldly, because I'd grown up with, you know, Ian Walker and David Howells and Gary Mabbott and all these people I was watching on TV, and then suddenly there they were in front of me. So that was a moment for me. I just... You don't forget your first time, do you? You don't forget your first time you get to see Spurs in the flesh. And it was just amazing. So I could pick a game or a moment or something like that. But actually, for me, the thing that gave me my emotional connection with Spurs more than anything else was just walking into that stadium and seeing my idols there in front of me. It still got goosebumps on my arms when I think about it.
I think we all definitely remember the first time that we were at the Lane. I remember going as a relatively young kid, but I just vividly remember just the crowd and the atmosphere and the energy that you feel when you're at a match. Like you said, Jack, it's just something that once you've experienced it, you want more, you want to keep going back again and to feel that overwhelming euphoria.
Well, you're small as well. This is what I think, when you go to a game as a kid, literally everyone around you is bigger, and your world is sort of your house, your school, the supermarket, the leisure centre. And then there's this football stadium, which has more people in it than you've maybe ever seen in your life in person, and the noise alone. And yeah, it's just fantastic. And you know what? Still, and I don't get to see Spurs in person as much as both of you do, but There's still something in seeing your team in the flesh. The last time I saw them was at Wembley. I think it was January 2018 against West Ham or something. And even though it wasn't at White Hart Lane, it was still my team. And here are my fans around us. And we're making this walk in together. And, you know, it just is it is special.
Like I said, we have a lot of members sort of around the world who maybe haven't had the chance to experience that. And, you know, I always say that if you ever get the opportunity, even if it's pre-season friendly when we do the tour in America, just to be able to go and watch them in the flesh and just to really get that adrenaline pumping and get that attachment, it's such a great opportunity. Like Sean, I'm sure it's the same for you as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, and it is moments, isn't it, that you remember within the stadiums and the different atmosphere. I mean, I remember my first North London derby and just the difference in the atmosphere on that day, you know, how much more there was to the atmosphere. And that those are the games when the random strangers just start hugging you when you score, you know, and all those kind of stereotypes become real. And yeah. And I remember the day that Paul Robinson scored a goal from his goal kick and just laughter around the stadium, really, because we weren't really paying attention because it was just a goal kick. And then all of a sudden we've scored. You know, it's those communal kind of aspects of it, isn't it? That togetherness and that sense that for those 90 minutes, 62,000 people, 36,000 people, however many it is in the stadium, have got that same desire as you've got. And you can just forget about everything else and just enjoy that. Those moments, and you know, even when you're talking a couple of hundred people on a cold night at the Hive, there's a different sense there in terms of being there for the players and offering your support to them. You know, I think it's a different thing that you have with that, because it's much more personal, but it's still about that those moments and that engagement.
Yeah, can I just say the other thing I remember as a kid was Ian Walker having the best hair of anyone I think I'd ever seen in my life to that point. I remember being a kid and thinking that those curtains, like I was never going to be able to pull it off. But I just remember thinking, okay, being a footballer is cool. Look at this guy. Why would you not want to be involved in football if you can look like that? He was the bee's knees to me.
I love that. Absolutely love that. Oh, so you know what? I think that's a really good note for us to end it on there. A lovely little bit of laughter and a great memory from you there, Jack. It's been wonderful having you, and we've really enjoyed being able to, you know, talk all things Spurs for once. It's been really lovely.
It's been a pleasure. And every time I watch from afar and I see the proud Lily White's banner so visible, it makes me so proud of this club. But also, let me blow a bit of smoke in your direction. And because what you're doing, that visibility, it's such a small thing in a way, but you both know it's such a big thing for people to see the LGBTQ+ community represented, proud, front and centre at my club, our club. It's fantastic. So thank you for having me on, and thank you for everything you're doing. And if you'll ever have me back, I'd love to do it again.
What do you think, Sean?
I think we might let him back, you know? No,
I've got my own mic. Come on.
No, it'll be great to have you back again, Jack. Thank you. Yeah, it's always great to get different perspectives and to talk to different people from our Spurs family as well as, you know, the LGBT family as well. So brilliant to speak to you. And hopefully we'll have a next time, Lee, when we're back in a month's time, we'll be talking about brilliant team once again and not worrying about all this nonsense.
Oh, fingers crossed, Sean, fingers crossed. But like we've all said, it's the hope that will get you.
Yep.
So thank you for joining us. I'm Lee.
And I'm Sean.
And I'm Jack.
And we will catch you soon.